different situation. When I went through this process in my own school, we had, you know, three locations with very, very low efficacy level on our upgrade programs. And we had, you know, literally maybe 15% of our students participating in our highest level program. And at the time, our paradigm on that was, well, you know, you've got to be a black belt to be an instructor. You've got to be, you know, a high-ranking student to learn this segment of curriculum or to learn this weapon or to learn this set of skills. So obviously every martial arts school, whether we like it or not, operates, looks kind of like a funnel, right? We have many less brown belts than we had white belts, you know. Every month people leave, they move out of town, they get sick and can't train anymore, they decide that they don't like martial arts anymore, and they quit, right? I mean, people quit. That's just the nature of the thing. So anyway, let me kind of restate the purpose of today for the recording's sake. But the highest degree of performance in these martial arts schools that we see all across the world is the greater proportion of students you can attract at an entry level and then have them so excited and so enthusiastic and so encouraged that they basically choose to participate in your school at a higher level, their retention rate is much, much better than the student who doesn't, right? Their retention rate is they're much more engaged in the process of earning their black belt. They're much more engaged in the process of accomplishing whatever goals it is that you have for your students in your school. Of course, tethered onto that, there are, in most cases, financial upsides, right? In most schools that are having a high degree of efficacy level on this stuff, is their, you know, upgrade programs have additional financial structures. You know, maybe they cost more. Maybe there's more, you know, retail equipment sales involved. Maybe there's more event sales, whatever it may be. And I'm going to share with you a little bit about how I kind of came through that process and, like, maybe the mental, you know, challenges I had with that, the psychological challenges I had with that, but then also the structure. So let me just give you the five-second overview, and then we can kind of get into some structure of how it can work in your school. But we had, like I said, maybe 15% of our students participating in our instructor training program. And for us, we thought the instructor training program was like the ultimate end-all, be-all of programs, right? And it was really good. I mean, we had fantastic curriculum and fantastic content and fantastic resources for the students and all these things. What we didn't realize at the time, though, was that there was a very limited segment of the market that was interested in being an instructor, right? So that was kind of the constraint that we built into our own program that sort of worked against us, right? And you know, of course, instructors are role models, and we have the ability to position the instructor as, like, you know, the guru in front of the student, and many students want to become that. Unfortunately, in the parent's mind, that can be a difficult leap, right? So in the evolutionary process, what ended up happening was, you know, this concept of leadership skills and interpersonal communication skills and not just being a participant in an activity but being taught the skills of individual leadership, group leadership, and executive leadership is a much more appealing product to the marketplace that we have, which in our case is families, right? Our target market is, you know, 5 to 12-year-old kids that have parents that train with us as well, right? So anyway, in that specific microcosm, in that specific market, the leadership, quote-unquote, leadership development message was a much more appealing message than instructor training, right? Although many of the components are exactly the same, right? I mean, does an instructor have to be a great public speaker? Of course they do. Does an instructor have to learn how to, you know, use interpersonal one-on-one, you know, communication and leadership skills? Yes, of course they do. But it was just marginally, it was a frame that sounds different to the market, is executed different in the marketplace, and has different benefits in the mind of the market, right? And the benefit is really what we're selling, not the feature. So that's just kind of like the concept, right? So anyway, make a long story short, in schools that are financially doing, you know, extremely well all across the world, all across the country, on kind of a repetitive basis, not just spikes, but that have sort of a high degree of profitability consistently, we see these commonalities. And one of the commonalities is this upgrade process, right? So if you're attracting a student into a basic program at X tuition, and really that's all they can ever do. You know, if they're in that sort of linear program that takes them all the way to black belt and beyond, and you know, they're going to pay you, you know, $60 a month when they come into school, and they're going to pay you $60 a month after their third year, regardless of the level of their training or the level of their engagement in the school, then there's all sorts of opportunity that we're missing there, right? So anyway, that's the reason for today. And the reason is that Rob identified at a very high level that many of the members in the Peak Performer Group and actually maybe one or two even of the Inner Circle members don't have a real system in place designed to attract a student into the basic program and then from that very first minute create an environment that gets them excited about being part of whatever that upgrade program is and then have a high degree of efficacy, a high ratio of getting those students into the program. Now let me just tell you some keys of how we do things kind of on like Planet Mile Karate and in my schools out here in Florida. Our target is 80% renewal to leadership. So right now in this one school in Orange City we have over here, we've got about 200 students, and we have about 130 of them in leadership, okay? Now of the other 60, of course that's not 80%, but of the 60 who are not, you know, ballpark, about 25 or 30 of those guys are just orientation students. They're just in their first, you know, first few months of training. Now, there's one thing, and by the way, that school, you know, roughly will do about $500,000 in a year, right? On 200 students, 2,400 square feet. So it's a very high profit school. It's a very high level of efficacy on leadership, but also we have great student outcomes. Our black belts are very high quality. You know, our brown belts are very, I mean, we specifically designed the system to produce very high quality students. And that's a little bit of what we're going to talk about today. If you're not worried about, you know, the black belts dropping out when they're in the black belt, then you can make it really tough on them, right? And that's one of the systems that we have in place to kind of do that. So anyway, let's go back to kind of the steps, okay? If we take this, you know, this macro view of these schools across the world who are really efficient at this, the primary component is the environment that you're creating for this student from day one all the way up to day that they renew, right? And it has to be very deliberately orchestrated, and it has to be very highly systemized so that you're providing kind of a constant or a consistent service from student to student to student so that you have something to measure, right? So again, here's kind of like the overarching perspective. We're trying to attract a student at a reasonable cost per customer acquisition, right? A reasonable cost per student acquisition. And then from the very first conversation we have with that student, we need to be preparing them for what we know in the future is coming for them, right? So let's just kind of go step by step. A new student info call comes in, and we handle the info call how we handle the info call, right? There's all sorts of resources in the marketplace to help you, you know, help your efficacy on info calls, and I'm sure we'll work on that at our peak performance meeting coming up next month. But the one key to this that a lot of school owners really miss is what you're initially selling a customer can't be positioned as being the end-all, be-all of programs, right? So you have to, in our model, we use a takeaway sale. So what that means is it's something like, Mrs. Jones, okay, Johnny did great in his intro lesson here, and you know, one thing I need to explain to you is our school is all about this program over here. And this program over here is called our leadership team. And in our leadership team, you learn X, Y, Z, and A, B, and C, right? Now, unfortunately, Johnny isn't quite ready for that yet because, number one, it's a tremendous level of commitment on the part of the student, but more so, it's a tremendous level of commitment on the part of our instructors and our staff. And frankly, we're not really ready to make that level of commitment to Johnny yet because, you know, we just don't know him yet, right? We're not exactly sure if this is going to be a great fit for him long term. We're not exactly sure if he's going to have the, you know, the focus level and the attention span and the, you know, we need to see him develop a little first before we can make a decision like that, right? So what we have for you instead is this thing over here, and this is our orientation program. So basically, what I've just done in that conference, right, in that, you know, 30 seconds of framing the student, right, is I'm sort of explaining to them that the real cool thing is over here. You know, the very high-level training, high-level of physical training, the high-level of mental training is over here on the right-hand side. Now, you have to qualify for that to be able to do it. Right now, we're not quite sure, right? And this is absolutely accurate, by the way. I mean, it's a huge commitment on the level of our instructors and the level of our staff to commit to a student for 4 years, to, you know, do the extra lessons and to, you know, walk them through the difficulties at school and, you know, do all these things.
Hello.
So, it takes a little bit of forethought to think about how that plays out in your school, right? Now, what the first mistake that a lot of schools make when they're thinking about their intro process, and they're thinking about only their intro process, about how I can enroll this student at the highest degree of efficacy, which is important, but in many cases, they're kind of forgetting about what they have to put in the student's mind, right? They're forgetting about the environment they have to create and the psychology that they have to induce in the student to get them to think the way we want them to think, right? Now, we do, in most cases, we do a fantastic job of that on the floor, right? In almost every case that I've seen of schools that I've done personal consulting with or that I've gone to their location or whatever it may be, you know, the instructor is highly charismatic. They're teaching the students with a lot of passion and a lot of verve, and it's a great class environment. And the instructor sort of inherently knows that they need to encourage little Johnny that becoming a black belt is the best thing he's ever going to do in his life, which is absolutely accurate, right? Now, the instructors are really, really, usually really, really good at that. Now, sometimes we forget to create that same sort of psychology in the intro room, right? We are so concerned about getting that student to enroll that we forget that the enrollment isn't the end of the sale process. Enrollment is the beginning of the sale process for this student. The end of the sale process is when we tie their second or third degree black belt on, right? And maybe not even then, right? I mean, that's just another thing. So what I mean by that is what we have to make sure we're doing in that initial sale conference is setting up the right psychology, setting up the right thinking in the prospect's mind, and the right expectations in the parents and in the student's mind so that they're thinking the way we want them to think about their career in martial arts. And the way they should be thinking about that is that it's a long-term thing, not a short-term thing. And they should be thinking about it not like a soccer season, but like a school, like an educational experience, like elementary school or college. And they should be thinking about not just earning their gold belt or their green belt, but they should be thinking about while they're earning their gold belt or their green belt, they're actually qualifying for something greater. They're earning credits, you know, and if they have enough credits, they get to go do something even cooler or even more challenging or even more fulfilling, right? So that's the first part of the orchestration, okay? So let me take another half a step back and walk you through some of our steps that you could certainly model, but at least you can, you know, sort of weigh against what you're currently doing and see if it makes sense. Obviously, the info call happens. We're setting an appointment to talk to the students and the parents, you know, together. When we have them in the first intro, our model is one intro, another intro, and then we enroll them at the second intro or just after the second intro. Now, you can argue that in many different ways. A lot of schools like to do the enrollment right away in the first intro. Some like to do three intros. Some like to do 2 weeks free and then enroll them after the second week, whatever it may be. Let me tell you a little bit of the magic behind this first. And I think it'll be clear why it's magical in the upgrade process. If you're doing an immediate enrollment, if you're enrolling the student the very first time you meet him, let's say it's a 6-month or a 12-month agreement or whatever it may be. In our environment, it's a 12-month agreement. And in our environment, it's $499 down, $197 a month. So if you're enrolling them on the very first conference, there's nothing wrong with that. I'm not going to make an argument one way or the other emotionally. But in my estimation and in our world, in our environment, we actually want that student to go home and come back for a second intro because while they're going home, we're handing them a bunch of stuff that we make them do, okay? So when our student comes in and they do their first intro, We're teaching them a couple of non-offensive martial arts techniques, right? We're teaching them how to stand straight and what that means. We're teaching them what the bow means. We're teaching them, you know, maybe like a kick and maybe like a block, right? Something like that. Something very simple, but kind of exciting for the student. You know, obviously this isn't about the intro, but that's sort of the orchestration, right? The physical part of the intro is almost irrelevant, as long as you're not doing anything that's sort of offensive to the parent or offensive to the student or is abusive to the student. You know, that's not that much magic. But there's much magic in what happens from the time you talk to the student and the time they come back, right? So in our environment, we have this big, elaborate four-color DVD package. It's a DVD and two audio CDs plus a little four-color booklet and some homework assignments. And what we do is we say something like this. Mrs. Jones, okay, we're going to go ahead and schedule you for your second lesson, and that'll be, you know, Thursday at 8. There's 8 o'clock for you, you know, whatever that may be. And here's the two things that I need you to do. Johnny, I have a homework assignment for you, and Mrs. Jones, I have a homework assignment for you. Johnny, your homework assignment is to, and you make it up, right, whatever it may be. In our case, we make them memorize one of our student creeds. And it's like one line, you know, one sentence, two lines, and it's, you know, I will only use my martial arts to defend my life or the lives of others, right? And the reason we make them memorize that one, the reason we make that the requirement in the first intro is because now we're pre-framing mom and dad and the student that this isn't about learning how to fight. This is learning, you know, only to use these techniques if you have to, right? It just folds into itself really well. So anyway, that's the homework assignment for Johnny. Now, the homework assignment for the family is we give them this big elaborate DVD package, and their assignment is to go home and watch the DVD and answer these 5 questions. And we hand them a little sheet that has 5 questions on it. Now, the DVD, when they take it home and watch it, is basically a big testimonial reel mixed in with a lot of action. So really what the DVD is at its core is it's all sorts of parents telling the family why it's been such a great experience for them, what they've gained, what they've experienced, what their challenges were, and how they overcome their challenges. Also, we have very strategically placed in the DVD price objection overcoming, right? So at regular intervals in the DVD, there'll be a quick clip of a family sitting on the sofa or standing in the karate school who said, you know, when we first enrolled in the school, we really didn't know how we were going to afford it. It was more than we expected it was. But we figured out how to do it by doing X, and I got to tell you, it was the best money we've ever spent because of Y, right? And they kind of lay it out. And none of these testimonials were scripted. They were all very conversational, very spontaneous, very believable because, frankly, they're absolutely true, right? So anyway, the reason this applies to the topic today is we're specifically orchestrating the first experiences that this student and this family have to prepare them for what's going to happen in the future. Okay, so the homework assignment they have is to go answer these 5 questions, and they come back in the next lesson with their 5 questions in hand, or we make them go answer the 5 questions and come back. Right? We have to make sure that they watch the DVD in our environment, that they watch the DVD, that they answer the questions, and they thought to themselves about the answers to the questions we asked them on the paper. Right? So when they come back in for their second lesson, we do their second lesson with the student, and then we enroll directly afterwards. Now, the reason we stretch it out over 2 instead of just doing it in 1 is because we want them to go home and watch the DVD. We want them to go home and check out the website, right? There's a few things we want them to do, and we sort of require that before we can enroll the student. And anyway, again, how that applies to the topic today is everything that they're hearing on the DVD and everything that they're hearing in the audio CD and in the written materials that we give the student is all about how they're enrolling in a basic trial program, but what they should really be thinking about is qualifying for our leadership program. And we sort of outline how that happens, right? So intro 1 happens, they go home, intro 2 happens, we enroll after intro 2. Perhaps let me stop there for a second, because this seems like it might be a natural place to break. And I will unmute everybody. Now, you'll be muted until you hit the number 6 on your phone. And if you've got a question specifically about where we're at so far on this, go ahead and ask it. But give me just a second here. And Okay, brilliant. So if you hit 6 on your phone, you'll be unmuted and you can ask a question. But let's stop here at the post-intro process and see if you have any questions or comments or anything we should discuss about this maybe I need to elaborate on. Anything specifically about that, guys? Hit 6 on your phone if you wanted to ask a question about just this first little step. No? Okay, okay. No problem. Okay, good. Then the next step then is going to be after the second intro. Okay, so now we've enrolled the student. Now they're coming to classes. In our environment, again, we're enrolling them on a 12-month enrollment, and it's, we call it the orientation program, right? You know, whatever you call it, I don't think is that important, other than the reason we use the word orientation is because we don't want them to think that they're enrolling on, you know, a hugely robust ongoing program that's going to take them all the way to black belt or whatever, right? So we just call it the orientation program, just like in a college or in a university setting. So the orientation program. Now, our target is between 2 months, actually 2 weeks and 2 months. In reality, it ends up being more like, you know, between 1 month and 3 months or so. Our target is to renew 80% of the students into leadership. And some of the orchestration, again, that goes along with that is from the first day the student comes into the school, we have very robust systems for homework assignments, both paperwork and mental, you know, like they have to go home and memorize student creeds and stuff like that. I'm sure everybody has, you know, very similar types of concepts. The only magic in that is that we very specifically orchestrated all these homework assignments to facilitate their thinking about leadership, right? They should be, you know, after they finish their first homework assignment, which is about serving other people, right? One of the first homework assignments that they do is service above self. So now they're kind of learning a little lesson about why it's important to value other people, why it's important to value other people's activity and accomplishments and things like that, right? Another one of the homework assignments is has to do with leadership from the front. I can't remember his name, Richard Hackworth, I think is his last name. But he wrote this book, he's like a Navy SEAL guy. And he wrote this book, and it is a very funny passage in the book. He's very abrupt in the book and very kind of belligerent, but he's like a soldier guy, you know? And there's an interesting passage in the book where he stands in front of a platoon of SEALs and turns and faces the same way they are, so they can all see his back. And his comment was something like, you know, you better get a good look at the way I look, you know, right now. You better get a good look at my back and memorize what I look like from behind, because I lead from the front, and you're never going to see me standing behind you. You're always going to be, you know, chasing behind me. So, you know, we have sort of a project that we do with our students like that. So anyway, what I'm trying to say is from day number one in class all the way up to the point of the student renewing, we're preparing them mentally, preparing them physically for our leadership program. And it sort of predisposes the parent to feel that, you know, this kicking and punching karate that I'm learning and the self-defense that I'm learning and these other things that I'm learning in classes are great, but what about this leadership component over here? How do I learn more about that? How do I get involved in that? How do I qualify for this, right? And this is exactly how we position it, but it's also the truth. We make the students qualify for it. They have a qualification cycle that they have to go through and accomplish, you know, these 5 or 6 steps, be able to qualify for that program, you know, that sort of thing. So anyway, that's sort of like the immediate orchestration in class, okay? So now let's look at it from a bird's eye view one more time. Let's say I had this upgrade program, and I call it the, you know, super club, you know, upgrade program, whatever you want to call it. But I do everything backwards, right? Now let's say I when I get the student on the phone for the very first time, I tell them how great my school is, and they come in for a first lesson. And then in the first lesson, I tell them how great this program is that they're going to be enrolling in and enroll them in. And now all of a sudden, I go back to them 2 weeks later or 2 months later or 3 months later or whatever it may be, and I tell them, well, you know, this program over here is pretty good, but this other one's even better. Well, you're kind of not being genuine, right? You're kind of telling them, well, what I told you before wasn't exactly right. You know, this program is great, and it's the best thing ever, except for this other one, right? So it's very important you don't position yourself that way. It's very important that you have an ethical outlook on this thing, and you pre-frame a student the right way for thinking the right way, right? Not just about curriculum, not just about, you know, features, but about what their long-term outlook is going to be in the program. So that's kind of how the beginning part of the orchestration works in our environment. And I'm just using our environment, you know, the quote-unquote Mount High Karate environment as a good example. Now I've also got some very intimate operating knowledge of schools from all different types and styles, from American Taekwondo Association to World Tong Sudo Association to, you know, WTF to, you know, ITF, all these different types of, in fact, the International Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu Association, I mean, you know, all of these other types of associations that don't really focus on business, but they focus on curriculum. And in many cases, the business systems aren't as fully developed as they need to be to produce very, very profitable, successful schools, along with schools that are generating high-quality students. So I know I talk kind of fast sometimes, but that's the beginning part of the orchestration. So that's sort of like intro one, intro two, what happens between there. Now, I'm gonna tell you about one more kind of system that we use that helps this renewal prep process, and then we'll pause again for questions. But starting from day one, like I said, we have the in-the-class homework assignments that the students are working on. We've got the in-class, like, physical activities that the students are working on if they're, you know, maybe watching the new students, the leadership students work with the new students, that sort of thing. They're seeing that physically in class every day. Two other key components are there's a visual component of this, right? And in our world of leadership team students wear, you know, blue tops, right? Doesn't matter. It's just something different than the regular guys, right? The new enrollment students, when they come in, they're wearing a white uniform, white top, white pants. When the student renews to leadership, now they're wearing a blue top. So they're doing something that physically looks different in the class. And when you walk into one of our schools, if you were to walk into my school over here right now, you would see a sea of blue tops. There's like, you know, like I said, there's right about 80% of our students that are on leadership. So if I'm a new white belt walking into that environment, or I'm a new enrolled student walking into that environment, I see that I've got this orientation class where everybody's kind of wearing these white tops, right? And then the whole rest of the school, you know, is kind of wearing these blue tops. And I'm thinking, you know, psychologically in my head, oh, okay, so this is what's next for me. It's just sort of a natural fit, right? It's sort of a natural progression of things. It's social proof working for you. Now, there's a lot of ways to make social proof work against you. You know, what if that new student walked in and only one person was wearing the blue top, or five people were wearing the blue top? Well, not quite the same experience, right? It's not the norm. It's not what's socially accepted, and it's not what's socially common. It's kind of what the exception is, right? So that's kind of like that little component. And then the second component I was just mentioning is kind of a big one. And this takes a lot of organization, it takes a lot of fulfillment, it takes a lot of work, but this is the level of efficacy, the level of work that you have to get to be able to have the level of efficacy that you want in these programs. And it's a renewal prep, like, sequence. And in our environment, it's a series of DVDs, of audio CDs, of letters mailed home, you know, physically mailed home to the parent, postcards mailed home, email sequences, all different media. In fact, web pages, teleseminars, and webinars, all different media to sort of persuade the student that the leadership program is something that's the best thing they're ever going to do in their life, but also it's appropriate for them and it's something that they can accomplish. So, for example, we have a weekly mail piece that goes out on the student's second week. The first week they get a different package. They get like a thinking and view package, which is a little different. But starting in the second week of the student's career, they get a physically delivered piece of mail every week. Sometimes it's in a big 10 by 13 envelope. Sometimes it's in a number 10 envelope. Sometimes it's in a craft envelope. It just depends, right? And all of these letters are very heavily testimonial laden. They're very persuasive. They're very conversational, with parents telling you the stories that they've been through, the challenges that their son or daughter has overcome, or the challenges that they've overcome personally because of the program. You know, all these sorts of things. So we call it like a renewal prep sequence. It's a very deliberately designed series of communication, starting from the day the student enrolls all the way up to the day the student renews in your program. In fact, we have another one that happens after that, but all the way up to the day that they renew, that is designed to educate them about the renewal program, to persuade them that it's a great thing for them to do, to help them understand the benefits that they're going to derive from that, and then to ultimately help them apply for that. Okay? So now the very last component that I wanted to kind of review real quick was, since we're positioning this program as it's something you have to earn and it's something you have to qualify for, which is absolutely accurate, we also have an application process. So in order for the student to qualify for leadership, they have an application process that they have to go through, right? And in the application process, they have to have their teacher's recommendations from school, they have to have their parents' recommendations, they have to have another like advisor or what do we call it? Not advisor, but mentor. Another mentor has to recommend them. So maybe it's a coach or a scout leader or something like that. Some other adult in the community who can recommend them. So when we put them through the application process, this is just congruent, right? We position the program as something you have to qualify for. We've done the takeaway so that they couldn't enroll in it in the first week, month, whatever, anyway, right? So now we have to follow through with that and require them to qualify. And we have a very rigorous qualification standard. They have to complete the application. They have to physically be able to accomplish certain things. They have to, you know, accomplish certain random acts of kindness. You know, there's all sorts of requirements to be able to participate in that. So anyway, then obviously the next phase is when the student has, you know, come through the renewal prep cycle, they've applied for renewal, they've applied for the leadership team, then we're going to do the conference with the parents, and that's a whole other, you know, topic to talk about. But at that point, most of the selling has already been done, right? If they're coming to you and applying for a position in the class, now really you're positioning as an advisor or as a person enrolling them, is that now you're just trying to figure out how to make it work for them, right? Now you're just trying to figure out the finances, and you're trying to figure out the logistical structures of how to make it work, right? So that's kind of like the overarching concept. Now there are three or four things that have to fold into this that are very, very important. And number one is scheduling. A lot of schools make a common mistake of leveraging class times with tuition structure, right? With their upgrade program. What I mean by that is, if you pay $50 a month, you can come once a week. If you pay $100 a month, you can come twice a week. And for $150, you can come unlimited, right? Well, that's very difficult. That's a very challenging environment to operate under. And here's a couple reasons why. If I'm a parent looking at your upgrade program, maybe it's leadership, and I'll use our language. If I'm a parent or a student looking at the leadership program, and one of the benefits of the leadership program is that I have an extra class on Friday, maybe it's a weapons class, or maybe it's a leadership class, or maybe it's a communication skills class, whatever it may be. But if it means I have to come to an extra class on Friday, a huge challenge that you'll have is the students who can't make the Friday class now feel like it's something that they wouldn't be able to take advantage of, therefore they wouldn't want to enroll, they wouldn't want to renew, right? So in our environment, instead of creating a whole other class that they have to make another trip to, you know, that whole thing, in our environment, we strategically plan our schedule so that they have extra time when they're already there to accomplish their leadership team requirements, right? So in our environment, we'd have, for example, a 45-minute class for an orientation student, and then the leadership students stay for the extra 20 minutes, 30 minutes, whatever it may be, okay? So, you know, there's a lot of magic in that. There's a lot of magic in taking a sheet of paper it's called mind mapping, right? And this is how I write sales copy, and this is how we write, you know, all sorts of sales letters and things like that. You do a mind map. If you sit down, and this is a great technique, you should write this down, you should do this tonight, right? You should sit down with a blank white sheet of paper, and in the middle of that sheet of paper, you write, you know, leadership team, whatever it may be, right? Whatever your goal is. And then you make these legs off of that middle goal, and you say to yourself, okay, what are the common objections? Why would someone not want to do this program? Why would they not want to be in my leadership program, right? And then you just list the objections. Number one objection might be money. It might be. Now, I got to tell you, we have very little difficulty with that, right? In almost all of our cases, if a student doesn't enroll in our leadership program, it's almost never financial. It's almost always a perception problem. So that could be another bullet point on your list. One item, one objection could be money. One objection could be, I don't think Johnny can really do it, right? They have a confidence issue with their son or daughter or themselves. Another objection might be, well, you know, I don't have time to bring him to more classes, right? So you list all these objections. And then you figure out how to strategically plan your presentation, but how to strategically plan your program so that you're ticking off all those objections as they go through their renewal prep process, if that makes sense. So, for example, in one of the sales, actually in several of the sales letters in our renewal prep sequence, it says, you know, here's the leadership program, here's what it's all about, here's what students are accomplishing, here's three or four testimonials. By the way, this doesn't require any more trips to the martial arts school. This simply requires an expanded experience while you're here. You know, so that thereby alleviates many parents from making that objection in the future anyway, right? Now, of course, when you're sitting at the table and you're signing papers, I mean, you know, people are going to have questions and concerns. But in most cases, if you design your program to defeat those objections with the structure of the program, then you have very little challenge with that. Okay, so that's sort of like a little bit of orchestration on that. Now, class time is important. Now, the next component of that is how visibly they're seeing it in the school, right? And I mentioned it earlier about the uniform tops and things like that. There's lots of other ways to do that. And, you know, some schools, you know, can only use the white traditional uniform, and that's what they want to use. That's fine. I mean, there's all sorts of ways to facilitate that. But what you really, really want to have to make a real high level of efficacy on, you know, having people in this program is there should be visual differences. There should be something that a student can see visibly that's different. There should be some way to create that social environment. I have a very good friend of mine who runs a Muay Thai school, and he runs his Muay Thai school exactly how we run traditional schools. And he has, instead of a belt system, of course they don't wear belts, he has trunks that have different color, you know, characters on it, on the bottom. And if you're, you know, a new student, you have white characters on the bottom. If you're 3 months or 6 months into the program, you have gold characters at the bottom, you know, that whole thing. So, I mean, there's lots of ways to customize this. You have to be able to translate for your own style and for your own environment. But the concept is social proof. What looks like the norm will feel like the norm to a new student. So if everybody in your school looks a certain way and the new students are striving to look that way, you have leverage, right? You have a reason for them to be thinking about, how do I get there, right? That's what the belt system is all about. You know, that's what all those things are about. So anyway, those are the key components, okay? The way your schedule works is very important. The way the social environment looks is very, very important. The last component that I want to mention, and then we'll certainly open up for some questions. I think I have two questions emailed to me already. By the way, if you do have a specific question and you didn't want to say it live, we've got you can email to me at tobymilroy@ natma.com. Anyway, the last component that we'll spend any time on is when you have instructors in the school, and you know, most of us that have you know, a decent number of students in school also have junior instructors and assistant instructors and things like that. Obviously, they should be living, breathing examples of whatever the upgrade program is, right? So if it's a leadership program, they should look like the leadership program. In our new model, one of our new models at Maha Karate is we have a new accelerated coaching program, which is, we call it Leadership Elite, and we've secured some components from some very well-known leadership experts and leadership speakers and authors and things like that. And our Leadership Elite program now is $9.97 a month. And the Leadership Elite uniforms now are what all the instructors are wearing, right? And it's basically a leadership uniform with some extra stuff on it, you know, with some, you know, lettering on it and things like that. So, again, they're the living, breathing example of what you want the social norm to be. And that social proof is never, you can never have enough of that. The last component of that social proof process that's very, very important in preparing your students for leadership or for renewal, whatever you want to call that, is kind of the orchestration of your class times, okay? So we already talked about, you know, if it takes an extra day for Mrs. Jones to come down, that could be a challenge. But what also can be a challenge is you have to make it very visual for those students to see what they could be experiencing, right? So for example, there's a few different ways to think about this, but for example, in our school, after 45 minutes when the orientation people or when the Master Club students are finished with their class, we dismiss them and keep the leadership people for an extra 15 to 20 minutes or whatever they may be. Sometimes it's 15 minutes, sometimes it's 30 minutes for the rest of their class. And of course, all of the Master Club students who are not enrolled in leadership at the time get to see what they're going to do, right? So immediately you have them go get the you know, their weapon out of their bag and start practicing the weapons for them, or you have them start doing the, you know, acrobatic kicks, or you have them start doing the you know, whatever is you know, really exciting. Or in many cases, we'll have them go over by the parents and do their leadership activities. You know, maybe their you know, communication skills or whatever it may be. Something that's very kind of exciting to the student who like isn't participating in that, but also very stimulating to the parent for them to understand how valuable it is. Now, you will always have, unfortunately, you know, the odd person who says, "Well, it's just, you know, not fair that he gets to do this and he doesn't get to do that," right? Well, I mean, those cases are always something where you've got the flexibility to do what you want to do with them, right? But that level of visual social proof, them seeing that the majority of the school is doing this, seeing that this is a very valuable program in front of them, is extremely important. You can't underestimate the importance of that. Okay, so those are the huge bullet points. Now, again, let me just quickly go over the logistical structures that we use and pricing and things like that, and identify one other little pitfall, and then we'll open up for more questions. Logistical structure for us, and this is very common, you know, Keith Hafner follows the same model, the Kovars follow much the same model, you know, many of the top, you know, martial arts school operators in the country follow the very same model, but our initial enrollment is a 12-month enrollment. For us, it's, you know, $197 a month. We have two upgrade programs. We have Master Club and Leadership. And for us, our goal is at about the two-month mark, for us in reality, it ends up being, you know, 3 to 4, something like that, to have 80% of the students ascend to the leadership level. Our Master Club level is a fallback if for some reason someone can't financially afford the leadership program. Now, a little piece of magic with that, by the way, is we discussed this in length at the last Inner Circle meeting, and I'll put that on audio at the site as well. But when you're talking about renewal systems, another huge pitfall is linear end-to-end renewals. So let's say, for example, I'm enrolling a student for 12 months, and I wait all the way until the end of the 12 months to renew them for another 12 months, or maybe renew them for another 24 months, or another 36, or whatever it may be, right? Now, the challenge with that is, psychologically, you're setting up the wrong expectation for the student. Psychologically, you're setting them up to think about karate like soccer, like they go to the end of the season and then they decide whether they want to quit or do more, right? That really dramatically depresses your efficacy rate, right? The rate of the people that you'd be able to ascend into that program. primarily just because they're thinking about it wrong. Not because there's not value, not because there's not benefits, not because there's not, you know, true value in the program, but just because you programmed them to think about martial arts in 6 month terms or in 12 month terms or whatever it may be. Okay? So how our structure works is both of our master club and our leadership program take the student all the way to black belt and beyond, and actually takes them to second degree, but it takes them all the way to black belt and beyond. That way they're not, a prospect isn't choosing between a shorter term and a longer term program. So again, a sure way to depress your renewal ratio is to offer, for example, a black belt club for 24 months, or 36 months, and a leadership program at 48 months, right? So now you've got a compound decision. A parent is making a decision, or a student is making a decision about not just what they value in the program, but how long they think they want to stick around, or what's a shorter time to commit to, right? So it's very important that we call it a parallel upgrade program. So instead of having a linear end-to-end upgrade program, we have parallel upgrade programs, so that, you know, a prospect isn't choosing the shorter term versus the longer term, regardless of the additional benefits in the longer term, right? And again, that goes back to the mind mapping process. One of the objections you're going to come up with is, you know, is commitment level, right? So if the commitment level of the student is, you know, if they can't conceptualize committing to a three-year program or a two-year program or whatever it may be, then you need to structure your program to sort of defeat that commitment objection, if that makes any sense. So let me take a breath again, and let's see if we have any specific questions about what we've accomplished so far. And I know it's a lot, and you know, again, we'll have this recording up on the website, so that should help review all this stuff for you. If you hit 6 on your phone, you'll be unmuted and you can ask a question about anything we've accomplished so far. I've got one question in my email that I think I'll address right now. And if you want to go ahead and get in line to ask a question, just go ahead and hit 6, and I'll let you know when we're ready. But the question I have online from is this from? This is from Ted. Okay, yeah, this is from Ted, and Ted says, I'm not sure. He's a little confused on my terminology, but that's okay. Let me maybe explain that real quick. In our environment, we have 3 programs. Actually 4 now, but 3 programs. Orientation program is a 12-month program. Our absolute goal is that no one in that orientation program progresses past maybe 4 months, right? We want those students to be renewing to our leadership team or to our master club well in advance of the 12 months. If you wait all the way until the 12, in fact, I think the ratio is about 8%. Only 8% of our students, if they go all the way out to the 12 months, actually renew. And that doesn't have anything to do with how enthusiastic they are about the program. It doesn't have much to do with how much value there is in the leadership program. What it has to do with is their psychological predisposition for how they're thinking about the program. You know, they're thinking about it as being at the end of the month, at the end of the year, I'll decide whether I want to continue or not continue, rather than thinking about what other opportunities are there for me in the program. Okay? So that was Ted's confusion, is how our program structure works. So let me reiterate one more time. We've got a 12-month orientation program. After, let's say, the second month or so, we're targeting up to about 80% of the student body to renew to leadership or to master club. And master club and leadership are parallel. They both take the student the same distance. They take them all the way out to you know, black belt and beyond. Right, taking the same length of time. The term is the same on the program. And the financial structure in our case is our leadership program is $359 a month, and our master club program is $249 a month. So there's about $110 difference. And our goal has always been to have master club be at least 50% higher than orientation, and to have leadership be at least 50% higher than master club. And now, ultimately, we also have this Leadership Elite program, which is $997 a month. And we actually just launched that 4 or 5 months ago at two of the schools out in Denver. And we've got we're kind of piloting it and building systems around it right now, but it's going very well. I think each school has maybe 15 or 16 people in that program. So I mean, you know, what would they do for your school to have an extra 15 or 16,000 a month? I mean, you know, it's definitely a huge financial win. We are fulfilling a great deal to those students. We've taken those students to Tony Robbins seminars that were $2,000 to register for. We've taken those students to all sorts of really cool, we've done some really cool stuff with them. So we're really trying to put together all the pieces of that puzzle, and I'll let you know more how that goes in the future here. But anyway, so that was his question. So in our environment, it's basic 12 months, Master Club and Leadership both go out to 48 months, plus they get some time on the end to secondary black belt in our environment, which is a retention argument that we'll talk about at another time. Anyway, so that's kind of how our structure works. I've seen many other terminologies for this stuff and, all that sort of thing, but the concepts are the same. The orientation program is finite. The Master Club and Leadership should be parallel and should be for the same amount of time to defeat the commitment objection, the difference in commitment objection, right? So that's kind of how that process lays out. I've got one more question about email, but let's pass on that for now. If you have a specific question about anything we've accomplished, or if you have a specific constraint in your school or in your style or something like that that you might need feedback on, go ahead and hit 6 on your phone, just the number 6, and you'll be unmuted, and we can discuss that. Go ahead and do that now, and I'll go to our next question. Okay, this is Steve. Okay, Steve's question is, Steve's question is kind of funny. He thinks that my demographic is, like rich, right? And really, here's the honest truth behind that. It's certainly not. The demographic that my school is in, the specific school we're talking about, but I'm talking about, kind of like my life writing in general. It's just a model. Don't get me wrong. So let me pause and take a second to say this. The reason I'm using the Maha Karate model as an example is, number one, it's something I'm extremely familiar with, but also it's just a proven entity. It's proven to be very successful in many different demographics and many different locations all across the country. Now, like I said, Keith Hafner, Timothy Kovar, Lloyd Irvin, I could name 60 or 70 people just off the top of my head, all who have very different styles, very different goals for their students, very different, teaching methodologies and things like that. But the underlying structure of the school, the logistical component of enrolling a student on a certain program, educating that person that program is just the beginning, then elevating them, ascending them at some point, and usually the earlier the better you ascend them. The retention is much better. The earlier, the better you send them into a higher level program that has many additional benefits. Now, let me say two more things about his question. My demographic is absolutely average. I think the average household income is like 37 or 38,000 in my area. It's not great. I've got a YMCA in my exact same shopping center that teaches Taekwondo for $35 a month. I've got an Aikido school behind me in exactly the next shopping center over. I mean, it's literally, I could walk out of our building, walk across the parking lot, and here's another one. It's Aikido school, and they charge $60 a month. And I've got, I'm not in an extremely affluent area at all. We don't even have an Outback Steakhouse here, right? We've got a Chili's and an Applebee's and, that sort of thing, right? I'm in shooting distance of Orlando, but I've got a cycle boundary where most customers don't cross a certain bridge. They don't go, they don't live. They live on this side. They work on the other side. They don't cross to do business. Anyway, so the answer to his question is, regardless of your demographic, regardless of the financial, landscape in your area, there's room to make this work. Now, having said that, if there's an extreme situation where maybe you've got 3,000 people that you're in and the average person worked at the factory, and 90% of the community, you know, worked at the factory, and the factory just closed down. Well, I mean, there's certainly some issues there, right? But, you know, we've got schools in metro areas and non-metro areas all across the country, and we all follow, you know, the same model. And again, you know, many of the most successful schools in the country are paralleling this model almost identically. And it's not something that we invented. It's something that, you know, between, you know, lots and lots and lots of these mastermind, you know, participants, like, you know, Stephen Oliver's group of people, which is, you know, like the Tommy Lees and the Tim and Dave Kovars, and, you know, I mean, all these people that he's associated with on the ESC board of directors, and, you know, all sorts of other organizations. These systems are tried and true and create the type of environment to make these things very successful, to make these upgrade programs very successful. So that was his question, was, you know, does it have a lot to do with the surrounding demographic? Now, the one thing it does have a lot to do with is how much your customer base values the upgraded education level, right? And here's a key that you can't miss. This is so important. You have to write this one down. If you sold that customer, if they believe that they're buying kicking and punching in self-defense, right, then trying to go back and sell that customer in 9 months or in 5 months or in 2 months or in, you know, 10 months more kicking and punching in self-defense, it's much more difficult. But if you go back to that student and you can show them additional benefits that are very different than what they're already experiencing, you'll have a much higher success rate. So, for example, in our model, well, let me explain a very flawed model. I did a consulting call about a month ago with a school that basically had a very basic curriculum for their orientation students, for their, you know, beginner students. And their upgrade program was based on taking all of that basic curriculum and layering on musical forms, weapons forms, and I think some kind of advanced sparring or something like that. I think multiple attacker sparring or something like that, right? Now, nothing wrong with that, right? All of those components of the program are valuable, but who are they valuable to, right? I mean, they're definitely stimulating to the student, because the student is going to want to, you know, they're going to definitely want to, you know, use the cool weapons, do the cool musical forms and all that stuff. But what about the parent? What about the family? What about that whole environment, that whole part of the environment, right? So in his environment, his struggle was he was trying to sort of sell someone the better mousetrap, whose mousetrap already worked pretty good, right? So what we want to try to accomplish for our students' sake is a whole different way of thinking about what they're doing as a martial artist, right? So we could certainly layer on more physical requirements. We could certainly layer on, you know, additional weapons and additional opportunities to learn physical curriculum. Absolutely, we could do that. But what's really compelling to the parent, or what's really compelling to the adult student, or, you know, or whoever the market may be, you have to determine that. You know, if I'm let's talk about Lloyd Irvin's model for just a second, because it's very instructive. Lloyd Irvin's model is he's got an orientation program for his mixed martial arts and jiu-jitsu program. Within 2 months to 5 months, he's renewing them into one of three programs in his case. And his highest level program is called the Combat Athlete Program. And in the Combat Athlete Program, he's doing all sorts of, you know, nutritional information and supplements and you know, watching their diet and, you know, their training systems are all different, all that sort of stuff. So you've got the same thing. Now, that market, that's very appealing to, right? That sort of, they want to be the next UFC fighter. So those components, the nutritional consulting and the performance consulting and all that stuff, are valuable components to that market. Now, if I'm the mom of a 9-year-old, musical forms and weapons forms probably aren't that compelling to me, right? Probably really exciting to Johnny, but, you know, to mom, probably not. So in our case, we layer on this character development curriculum. We have a basic character development curriculum for our orientation students, but for our leadership students, we have this entire separate and different and visibly different advanced leadership curriculum. And this has to do with, you know, all sorts of components. I just couldn't even begin to mention, label them all. But so now we've got physical components that are compelling and interesting to the student, and we've also got, additional components that are compelling and interesting to the family and to the parents, right? And in our case, we have a high degree of enrolling parents when we do the renewal conference for a student, which means the parent didn't really feel it was very compelling to be in a basic martial arts program. But when it came down to this leadership program that we've developed, they were very enthusiastic about that. And in many cases, we have parents that enroll in our program when their children renew into a leadership program, and they just add on, that sort of thing, because they see the additional value and benefit in that part of the program, if that makes any sense. So again, that's sort of how the orchestration all has to work together. All those components have to be firing on all cylinders together to kind of complement each other. Again, if you do have a question or a specific comment, I know we've had so many technical difficulties today that, right now we've got, I think, 9 people on the call, and normally we have, 30. So if you do have any questions about that, hit fix on your phone and speak right up. I'd be happy to give you some input on that. Anything specifically, guys? Who's this?
Yeah, this is William Campbell.
William, brilliant. Thanks so much. I'm so glad you made it on the call finally.
Oh, yeah,
Sorry about that. He's unbelievable.
The question I have is, you have your leadership in your master club, and you said it takes them both to the same belt. So what's the benefits for the master club? Or why would somebody not do the leadership and go to the master club, I guess?
It's a really good question, and I mentioned earlier, but it's complicated. The only reason we ever put anybody in master club is as a financial fallback position for leadership. So let's say we've got Mrs. Jones, and Mrs. Jones has Johnny, right? And we're doing the renewal conference, and they're really excited about leadership. But for some reason or another, they just, can't financially make it work right now. They think that they can in 2 months, or whatever it may be, right? So instead of just not renewing them to a program that will take them to Black Belt Beyond and putting them back in the basic program, we fall back to Master Club. So we enroll them in that Master Club program. Now the Master Club program will take them all the way out to first degree Black Belt and ultimately to second. But it's sans the leadership curriculum components, right? So they're in the classes working out with the orientation students or with the, a little complicated, but without getting into it, they're in their regular classes with everybody that they would normally be in with, and they're basically like a student at a certain point when their class is over, and then the leadership students go do their leadership stuff, right? So it's a good question, and the answer is the only reason we ever put anybody in that Master Club program as a temporary financial fallback to leadership. Does that make sense?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So we're not, quote, selling Master Club. You know what I mean? We're never, ever, ever, ever in class saying, one day you could be part of the Master Club. And we're never, ever saying that. We don't even mention it. In fact, right now, if you looked at if you walk into any school in Denver or any school out here, there's maybe, like 2 black tops, which is what the Master Club guys wear, maybe 2 or 3 black tops in any class, Maybe there's 30 kids in the class. There may be 2 kids or 3 kids that are still in Master Club, And they usually fall into 1 of 2 categories. Number one was they were, difficult to deal with, never really engaged in the process, never really absorbed any of the messages that we were sending, like the drop-off parents and the parents who won't watch a DVD or won't go to a website or won't read the sales letter or won't check their email or won't, these parents that just didn't get engaged in the process and just couldn't be convinced, but they still wanted in their bio, that kind of thing. And then the second category would be, just that temporary financial fallback position. So that's kind of how we position that.
Okay, thanks.
If that makes sense. Sure. Anything else that you guys can think of? I saw another email come in, but I don't think it was questions. No, it sure wasn't. Anything else you guys can think of? Okay. Well, that probably gives you a pretty good outline of how these systems kind of need to work together, right? So from a 40,000 foot in the air perspective again, your info call script has to coordinate with your intro process. And the intro process has to sell a program as orientation, as a beginner, this isn't the end-all be-all program because you haven't qualified for that yet. You know, this is the beginning, right? Then within that, you know, within that sweet spot, which scientifically the sweet spot is right around the first Bell graduation for a student, you know, which typically is between 2 and 3 months. And there's all sorts of triggers behind that. You know, they're excited because of their new rank. The parents are also seeing how the process unfolds. There's lots of reasons for that that are all very, very positive. But the fact, you know, the sweet spot is right around that 2 month mark, you know, something like that. But from the first day the student becomes a student on the floor, we have to be continually and aggressively dripping and persuading that family, persuading that student that this other thing over here is fabulous and here are the benefits. And, you know, social proof is a huge component of that, so that they're not just listening to what you say, they're listening to what, you know, 25 other parents just like them have to say. So that's sort of like that part of the orchestration. The second part that has a lot of magic is the structure of the program, the term of the programs, and how they lay out. The worst thing you can do, I mean, you know, honestly, the most difficult way to make these work is to do a green belt program. The student goes all the way out to blue belt, and then you try to enroll them onto a black program, and then they go all the way out to black belt, and then you try to enroll them into the master club to take them a second degree. I mean, that's very, 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 very difficult because of the funneling effect. Lots of challenges with that. And we've seen very direct evidence in schools all across the world that the sooner a student makes a commitment to a past black belt program, the longer they stay. The retention rate in schools who have linear upgrade programs is significantly less than if you have an early parallel upgrade program. So and it's just a psychological thing. I mean, it's just you're training your student to think about martial arts a certain way. And the way that doesn't work very well for their long-term longevity is to let them think about it or to make them think about it like they think about soccer. I'm going to do karate for 12 months and then I'm not going to, you know, I'm going to decide whether I want to not do it, right? Very different psychology. So that's a bunch of magic right there. You know, I think that's a lot. Anything else, you know, real quick, I think we should run, and I'll upload this. I'll get this recorded and uploaded just as soon as humanly possible. It usually takes them a couple of days to get it to me, and then it's about a day for me to get it up on the website. So I'll put a big button on the member section so you guys can take a look at it. But anything else specifically that you can think of? No? Okay. Well, in the next bonus call, which hopefully we'll be able to do next month, we'll talk about how to launch these things, how to launch these renewal programs. A challenge is one of the things that I have working for me that you'll have working against you if you don't have a program already in place, a renewal program already in place, is we've got social proof, right? When you walk into my school, you see, you know, 80% of them are in leadership, 80% of them are in blue tops, 80% of them are doing that level of program. You won't have that if you don't already have a renewal system in place that has a high degree of efficacy, that has a lot of students in it. You won't have that. So you've got to artificially create that. And there's a lot of ways to do that. And when I say artificially, I don't mean, you know, deceptively or unethically. I just mean that there are ways that you can create the culture in your school, even if you don't have visual social proof, to make that kind of work for you. Okay? So we'll talk a little bit about that in the next bonus call. And then we'll have all these up in the quick start area to get everybody up to speed very, very quickly. Okay, great. Well, if you guys don't have anything else, I will be seeing everybody next month in July. We've got our next call coming up. Our next live meeting, which is hugely valuable. One thing I'll recommend is we'll be talking a lot about renewal systems, a lot about launching renewal systems. a lot about the orchestration and all that stuff at the live event. So if you currently have a renewal program in your school, or if you have challenges with it, whichever it may be, bring with you copies of things to share with our member, with the members of the group. So I would say maybe 20 or 30 copies. If you have a letter that you send to the parents that introduce them to the program, bring that letter. If you've got postcards that you send home to teach the students about your upgrade program, bring those as well. If you don't have anything, great. But if you have any types of material that you're using for renewal or renewal prep, bring those. In addition to that, we're also going to be talking a lot about retention systems. So anything that you're doing inside your school for retention sake, so internal activities that build retention, communication to the students and the parents that build retention, any systems that you're using in your school that help facilitate your retention numbers, bring that as well to share with the group. And we're going to be highly productive at this meeting and have all sorts of things to share. So feel free to bring that material to get feedback on and to share with the group. Okay? So thanks so much, guys. I sincerely, again, apologize for all the technical issues that we've had. I have no idea what happened, and I hope that they're solved. But we will speak really soon. Thanks, guys.